Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Friday, weeks after homeless advocates called for San Francisco officials to move unhoused people into hotel rooms, Mayor London Breed announced the number of coronavirus cases spiked from 5 to 70 at San Francisco's largest homeless shelter, MSC South. As of yesterday, the San Francisco Chronicle reported that a total of 91 people have tested positive at that shelter, 81 residents and 10 staff members. Officials say people have been moved to hotel rooms to quarantine. But these numbers only reflect positive cases, and it's still unclear how far the virus has spread and how many unhoused people may have contracted it. The fact of the matter is we just need more testing. As California continues to shelter in place, the state's homeless population of 150,000 are still left exposed to contracting and spreading the coronavirus. Yesterday, hundreds of people lined up in their cars, organized a car protest to call on Mayor London Breed to immediately test all shelter residents and moved unhoused people into hotels. Joining us now to talk about all of this is Joe Eskenazi, managing editor and columnist at Mission Local, a news outlet covering all aspects of San Francisco. Joe recently wrote a widely read article called COVID-19, the Atlantic article about San Francisco is a fable. Here is what's really happening. And that piece is in response to an Atlantic article, and we will ask Joe to tell us more about that. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rose. Happy to be here.
Great to have you, Joe. How are you and your loved ones doing?
As well as could be under the circumstances. Trying to make sure the kids don't fall down the stairs and put us in the hospital.
Right, because you have twins.
Twins and an older brother.
Wow. Okay, so you guys are busy. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for working, and thanks for coming on with us. Joe, before we dive into your piece, which does focus on a lot of these issues, can you just give us a little bit of background and talk about how we got to this point in San Francisco? I should also mention that we did invite someone from the mayor's office to join us, and we never heard back.
Well, I think the thing to point out here is that we should be grateful that the leadership in San Francisco and the Bay Area counties, which contain a multitude of cities, were quick on this. And had to be, because coronavirus was here before it was elsewhere, and it was taken seriously here. And leaders here listened to their experts and took, you know, decisive steps. But the problem is that San Francisco is not acting in a vacuum, and San Francisco is not leading the charge. San Francisco is part of a six-county stay-at-home order that was written and issued by health directors, not by mayors. That's the issue here. So we can give credit to our elected leaders for doing what they did, but we can't give them credit for not doing what they didn't do. And we have to be a bit resolute about myth making during a time of crisis, because people tend to get emotional about this, and that's why I think people are latching on to Governor Cuomo in New York, even though his record is marginal at best and was not good before. So that's a lot of what the article is about. It's not meant to take anyone down a notch here. It's meant to be real about what's really happening, and also to point out that it doesn't take much for things to go off the rails when you're dealing with COVID-19, and the muddled response to our unhoused population could be enough to cause significant problems for everyone. It does not take much for a healthcare system to become overwhelmed, and that could well happen here.
Right. You know, and we'll go into the details of your piece, Joe, because I learned a lot from it. I mean, it's hard to know what actually happens behind the scenes unless a reporter like you exposes it and actually talks to people. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But can you lay out for us just how the homeless crisis really unfolded? Because we did hear from advocates weeks ago who were demanding that city officials put unhoused people into hotel rooms to protect them and to protect the wider population.
Sure. I mean, what's going on here is that San Francisco's longstanding homeless crisis, which is not the making of this mayor or the mayor before her, the mayor before that one, is being exposed. And crises like these expose the problems and expand the problems you already had. And so for weeks, people have been saying that it is just a ticking time bomb to keep homeless people crammed into shelters on top of one another, or left to their own devices on the streets. That's just epidemiologically, it's just a petri dish there. And the call that Matt Haney and that Joe Wilson will be on the show and others will have been making is to put people into the vast recesses of the unoccupied hotel rooms. That's one way of doing things, and that's something that we could do. Also coming up now are monitored tent encampments where you can keep an eye on everyone and you can monitor social distancing. These are all things to do. Unfortunately, whatever it is we've been doing has been kind of, the messaging has been muddled, problematic. It has been going slowly, and as a result, you know, many people were left in shelters. Others, when the shelters have closed to new guests, that just shunts people onto the street with little recourse. And a tremendous outbreak took place last week at MSC South, the city's largest shelter. I think the numbers are now up to 91 residents and staff. And so this is exactly what was warned about for weeks and weeks and weeks. It's kind of a situation of Amityville and Jaws, right? This is exactly what people were saying would happen. We can argue about the workability of the solutions they were positing, but this is what we were warning about.
Right. That is Joe Eskenazi, managing editor and columnist at Mission Local. Now I would like to welcome Joe Wilson back to the show. Joe Wilson is executive director and former client of Hospitality House, a community-based organization providing opportunities, resources, and shelter for unhoused people. We talked to Joe last week, Joe Wilson, and we cited Joe Eskenazi's piece about Hospitality House moving all unhoused people into hotel rooms. Welcome back to the show, Joe Wilson. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, Rose. Hi, Joe.
Well, Joe. How are you? Hey, Joe.
Joe Wilson, I should say that we did invite someone from the mayor's office and we never heard back, because I would love to really get a city official on the show to find out how are the testing decisions being made. How, for example, at this outbreak at MSC, It's you know, tests are very scarce across the country and in California. So, Joe, do you know why we saw so many people being tested at MSC South?
Well, we saw so many people being tested after the fact, and that's a huge problem. I mean, advocates have been warning for weeks now that we needed to beef up our testing capacity across all of their shelter programs, and frankly, for unhoused people in the street, getting folks out of the shelters into, you know, reducing the congregate living capacity, shelter capacity, get those folks into hotels, test everyone, not wait until people are symptomatic. Most people are not. That doesn't give us an accurate picture of the scope of the crisis, and now we're seeing that. We should also point out that even at this late date, a week later, we still have not tested everyone at MSC South, nor have we tested everyone at Division Circle, where the first positive case was reported. And so we are behind, and every day that we don't take action increases the possibility of the system being overwhelmed, the very outcome that health officials say that they're trying to avoid.
Well, have you been able to get answers to this, Joe Wilson? How is the city deciding who to test? Because as you said, at this point, it seems like everyone in shelters should be tested.
We have no idea. What they're telling us is, they're deciding the medically vulnerable first. And as we have been articulating, for homeless people, you know, in shelters and on the street, they're all vulnerable. And so that's a very specious analysis of who deserves to be tested and who doesn't. And it doesn't give us an accurate picture of the scope of the crisis, what resources we need to marshal. And every day that we're not taking advantage of the empty hotel rooms that are available, it's inexcusable that we are moving so slowly on this, and it's costing people's lives.
We're going to talk about hotels in a minute. Joe Eskenazi, the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, says that MSC South has tested 125 people out of 190, according to one of their tweets. Joe Eskenazi, do you have any idea how city officials are making these decisions on where to test and how many people in other shelters have been tested?
I don't. That doesn't mean that there's not a policy, but it's not being put forward as to explain who's being tested and who isn't. And as Joe mentioned, it seems somewhat arbitrary. I've read emails sent by people who were residents out of MSC South, and the practices seem antithetical to preventing the spread of the disease. In order to and counter contradictory, in fact, in order to engage in social distancing in the dining room, for example, one resident claimed that the overflow was instead made to congregate in a unventilated stairway shaft, which seems, you know, like the worst thing you could do. So everybody ought to be tested. The question is just about resources, and so many of the city's problems are you have bad decisions made when you have scarcity. And I'm not sure how much access to testing we've got. And as you both probably know, when Boston did extensive testing of its shelters, I think it found one out of every three residents was infected. I'm not saying that would happen here, but it's not implausible. And then you would have to wonder, where are they going to go now? It would be a very difficult scenario.
Right. And going back to the Coalition on Homelessness, they're tweeting, the city does not want to test another shelter to see if that is the case elsewhere, what we saw at MSC South. The city is only moving some people from shelter streets and SROs into hotels, those who are over 60 and those with underlying health conditions. The city has now filled 833 hotel rooms. The city has 3,900 hotel rooms in the pipeline. Joe Wilson, what do you know about people who have tested positive at MSC South? Has everyone been moved into a hotel room at this point?
I have no idea. That information hasn't been shared with me personally. My assumption has to be that that's probably true.
That's what I was told. That's what I was told. I was told that all the remaining residents were moved into either isolation or quarantine hotel rooms, and staff was offered, and I don't know how many staff, but staff that tested positive. I don't know how many of them took them up.
Well, today we're talking about the homeless crisis in San Francisco and how city officials are dealing with COVID-19, the outbreak at MSC South, the largest shelter in the city, and what is happening in other shelters. And it's not just shelters. There are a lot of tents, people in tents in various neighborhoods. And so we're going to talk about that. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, Joe Wilson, executive director and former client of Hospitality House, last week they moved their unhoused clients to hotel rooms. Joe Eskenazi reported on that. He's managing editor and columnist at Mission Local. If you have any questions for them or comments, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. You can tweet us at yourcallradio. We did invite someone from the mayor's office, but we did not hear back. Joe Eskenazi, tell us what you're hearing from members of the board, because there's been a lot. There have been some press conferences this week. Supervisor Dean Preston actually launched a GoFundMe campaign to raise money to put people in hotel rooms. Do you have any sense of what the conversations are like between the mayor's office and the board of supervisors who are calling for more hotel rooms?
I can't tell you exactly what the conversations are like, but I think it's very strained at this point. I think that there is a fundamental difference. The supervisors certainly a plurality, if not a majority of them, and I think you will probably get all of them voting for the emergency legislation today to move people into hotel rooms. But I think that the supervisors want people moved into hotel rooms, and the mayor's office has a number of reasons why it's not easy to do and may not be practical. And I think that at some point, you know, that's not a compatible discussion. And so I think it's extremely strained at this point.
Anything to add on that, Joe Wilson?
Well, it's unfortunate that in the midst of a crisis that our elected officials cannot work together. I think in the You know, in these circumstances, I mean, the city leaders have an obligation to put aside political differences. I believe that the legislative branch of government is trying its best to be a partner with the executive branch. That has been difficult in these times, but I think we have an obligation to the people of San Francisco to put aside those differences, to marshal all of our resources together to defeat this crisis. And frankly, all of the inequities, the dismantling of our public health infrastructure, our institutions across the board, the racism, the income inequality, the sexism, the classism, it's all on full display here in San Francisco. And I think we need to act with all deliberate speed to make sure that we simply don't continue the inequity and the ignorance that has shortened the life chances of so many poor people and certainly homeless people in this city for decades.
Joe Wilson, we have an email from Charles, and he says, I've been getting calls from a homeless friend who is sick and would like to get treatment and a referral to a hotel room. Where should he go?
He should go 440 Turk and ring the front door buzzer and say that he is trying to get into a hotel room. He's a homeless person trying to seek shelter and to save his own life. Could someone please help him?
440 Turk?
Yes.
And what? Where is that, or what is that?
Those are the administrative offices of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing.
Okay. Do you know of anyone else who's tried that?
We don't know of anyone else who's been successful at it. We know of several people who've tried.
Well, thank you, Charles. Please email us any updates about your friend, or if your friend would like to join the show. We would love to hear from your friend. Again, Joe Wilson says he should go to 440 Turk Street. Thank you for the email, Charles. You can email us yourcall@kalw.org. You can also join us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Joe Wilson, you were on a recent call with the Coalition on Homelessness, ED, Jenny Friedenbach, along with a couple of doctors. And they all said that once people are moved to hotel rooms, you know, depending on their personal situation, they might need a lot of wraparound services. And if they're positive for COVID-19 and they actually have symptoms, you know, they'll definitely need some kind of care. So can you give us an update on what that looks like in hotel rooms?
Well, first and foremost, we know that housing is a health intervention. And so if we're trying to improve someone's health, we need to get them from the outside to the inside. And once they're inside, and the living situation is more stable, we'll have an opportunity to determine what additional services and support that person is going to need. We have the capacity to marshal more resources, more wraparound services if needed for the individual. But we can't do that if people are living in congregate settings and shelters, as has been proven. We can't do that if people are outside in tent encampments, as has been proven. And so we have a responsibility here to take concrete, rational, practical steps to, first and foremost, in a triage setting, you want to stop the bleeding. And stopping the bleeding in this instance means getting people from the outside indoors where we can do the testing or the assessment, the analysis of what people are going to need, and bring those resources to that person where we have them in one spot.
Anything to add, Joe Eskenazi? Have you been doing any reporting on this?
Sorry, can you refresh me on the
sure.
overall nature of the question?
Yeah, just there's so many layers involved with moving people to hotel rooms depending on their needs. And if they do have symptoms from COVID-19, they're going to need medical care. So a lot of doctors say that, you know, we definitely need wraparound services in hotel rooms. And, you know, we've been talking for a couple of weeks about what that would actually look like.
I think that's one of the logistical challenges that is holding things up, and I think it's also one of the reasons that the numbers quoted in San Francisco appear so high. It's all the ancillary services, and it's also one of the things that's frustrated people who have privately fundraised to put people in the hotels. Their their beef, which I think is legitimate, is that, you know, the public money could be used, the private money could be used to enhance these wraparound services, whereas the public money would be better applied toward the rooms themselves. But yes, that's what would be necessary. Insofar as it's a solution to put people in these rooms, it's not going to work if you just put people in these rooms and hope for the best.
Exactly. Well, we also have
an opportunity here.
Go ahead, Jim Wilson.
In terms of the congregate shelter settings, I mean, Kenny Friedenbach of the Coalition has also recommended that we simply move the entire shelter operation from the congregate setting into the hotel setting. And so we will have the staff there, simply move the entire operation from A to B. We'll have the staff there, we'll have the relationships there, and then we'll have the capacity then to assess who's going to need what and how much more of one thing or several things that we're going to need for that population.
We have a caller who has a question about spending and funding. Let's go to Carol in San Francisco. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, what I'm wondering about is where is all the money gone for the homeless to begin with? In 2017, there was $59 billion donated in the name of the homeless in January. In July, there was $100 million donated to the homeless. And then that white upsurping mayor who upsurped London Marine for a moment there, he even donated, I forget how much, before as he was leaving his office. You know, there's so much money out there for the homeless, right? And there should at least have been 100 porta potties without padlocks throughout the city. You know, and where is all that money? Where is the accountability for the money that's out there? It should not even be an issue with the amount of money. We should not have to rally up more funds for them. What has happened to all the money that's been donated for the name of the homeless? The homeless aren't seeing it.
Joe Eskenazi, do you want to take that one first?
Sure. I think oftentimes I recommend there was a very good article about this written by Heather Knight in the Chronicle that kind of tallied up all the money, and it's hundreds of millions of dollars, but, you know, the simplistic notion, and I'm not implying that the caller just said that, but a lot of people will just say you have X number of homeless people and you spend Y number of dollars, so the X over Y, and you get this number per homeless person, but that's not true. The majority, the plurality, if not the majority of money spent on the homeless goes to paying people's rent, goes to supportive housing, goes to housing to keep people from being homeless. So a lot of the money goes to the people in buildings that you don't see rather than the people who are on the street that you do see. And rent in San Francisco is expensive. So that's a goodly chunk of it there.
Joe Wilson, what would you add?
Well, I certainly agree with that. And I think that oftentimes we can draw, as Joe said, we can draw simplistic conclusions from less than a total picture of the information. I do think that based on the total city budget, what we spend on homelessness every year is barely 0.3% of the total city budget. And in that context, we are not spending nearly enough to address this problem. We know that over the past two decades, we have fallen way short of our housing production targets. For very low income people. We know that we have approaching 150,000 people in San Francisco who live in households where the annual income is barely $11 an hour. We also know that in multiple zip codes in San Francisco, we have pervasive poverty, continuing health disparities, meth and amphetamine and opioid drug crisis that is decimating working class communities, and our economic system in terms of the jobs that most working class people hold is now being borne out on full display that those jobs are least capable of supporting people's standard of living, even in a minimal basis, and they are the most vulnerable during an economic downturn, and that's exactly what we're seeing. And so we're going to be seeing more homeless people, more people struggling at the margins, and so we need to increase our expenditures on our people of San Francisco, not diminish.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Joe Wilson, executive director and former client of Hospitality House. Last week, they moved their unhoused clients into hotel rooms. It was reported by Joe Eskenazi, managing editor and columnist at Mission Local, a news outlet covering all aspects of San Francisco. We did invite someone from San Francisco Mayor London Breed's office to join us for today's show, but they did not respond to our request. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can also post a comment or question on the website at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we are going to talk about farm workers and meat processing plant workers on the front lines. Farm workers say that rural communities are not prepared. Many do not have protective gear and they fear getting sick. Smithfield Foods closed its South Dakota pork processing plant after hundreds of employees tested positive, and a Tyson pork plant in Iowa has also closed. So we're going to talk about how we can ensure that these workers are protected. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can send us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's show about how the city of San Francisco is dealing with its homeless crisis, in about 10 minutes, we'll find out what's happening in New York City. But right now, we're going to spend about 10 more minutes on San Francisco. So if you have any questions for our guests, Joe Wilson, ED and former client of Hospitality House, and Joe Eskenazi, managing editor and columnist at Mission Local, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Joe Eskenazi, supervisors are going to vote on an emergency ordinance demanding that 8,250 hotel rooms be leased by April 26th. Do you have any updates on that?
Yeah, there was some procedural business that made it unclear whether it was going to be voted on this week or next week. It will be voted on this week. I would not be surprised if we get 10 or 11 supervisors voting for it. Also, I have heard that while this originally was an unfunded mandate, now they're working out a supplemental budget line that would fund it. Something to keep in mind here is that it's the mayor's purview whether or not to spend money. It doesn't matter how many supervisors vote for it, and I know they want 8, which is a veto-proof majority, but it's the mayor's purview in San Francisco to not spend on items, regardless of how many legislators voted for it. So I do believe that if Mayor Breed is dead set against, you know, following this line, she doesn't have to do it.
And what are your thoughts about, I mean, I don't know if you can answer this, Joe. Again, we really would love to have an official join us, Joe Eskenazi. What are your thoughts about what's going on within the mayor's office and the Department of Public Health, just in terms of the decisions around, you know, placing unhoused people in hotel rooms?
I don't think they're doing nothing, but I think what they're doing isn't fast enough, and I don't think that that's anybody can deny that. And that doesn't make them, you know, villains or bad people, and nobody wants bad outcomes, but that's what's happening. The shelter-in-place order doesn't include homeless people, and for weeks people have been advocating moving the homeless people into hotels, and there has been pushback based upon a number of factors, all of which are true to an extent. This is hard to do with a staffing-wise. This is hard to do, you know, considering behavioral issues. This is hard to do considering money issues, all of these things. Those are all great excuses why you can't do things, but as Joe Wilson has put it, it lends to lack of action when more action is needed. And, you know, there are also other solutions. There are tent encampments where people can, you know, where sheltering in place can be monitored. All of these things are solutions to something of a solution. It's not nothing. It's not leaving people in a congregate setting. It's not locking the doors on that congregate setting and leaving other people defend them for themselves in the street. That's what's happened. That's what's happening now.
Right. Well, and again, the mayor's office did not get back to us, but I would like to read a quote from Mayor Breed, and thanks to one of our listeners who just sent us this via Twitter. This is from KTVU. Mayor Breed said, meals have to be provided. Staff needs to be mobilized to be accessible 24 hours a day. She said, quote, it has not been easy. It has not been easy to provide adequate staff. It's been very challenging to get even some of the residents who are part of our shelter system in our hotels to comply with the order to even wear masks. So it's not as simple as what people would like to think.
No one said this would be simple. But the thing is that for all the talk of portraying homeless people as being universally drug-addled and dysfunctional and intransigent, many people are not that way. And, you know, I've written that the order came down to family homeless providers to leave rooms empty rather than waiting for a quarantine, rather than moving in families of five or of seven, living in DV shelters, living in cars. So, you know, these are all reasons why the worst off among us cannot be helped. But there are many homeless people who can be helped. As Joe Wilson told me for one of my stories, just people living in shelters have to have some degree of functionality. These people don't have staff hovering over them 24 hours a day. It's not a hotel, you know, to pardon the mixed metaphor on that one. So these are all reasons why, you know, it won't be perfect. But you know, let's not make the perfect the opposite of the good.
Joe Wilson, what's your response to Mayor London Breed's comments?
Well, it's disappointment. I think that we'd also say that just welcome to the world of poverty and homelessness. I mean, yes, it's all difficult. People have been saying that for decades now. I think that the really unfortunate reality here is that the people who were last in line 6 months ago, homeless people, are still last. And from our vantage point, here at Hospitality House, I mean, we couldn't afford to wait any longer to move people to a better situation, understanding the risks involved on both ends. There was risk if people stayed where they are. There's going to be risk if people are moved. We'd rather take the chance on doing something rather than nothing. This is an example of, frankly, where the cost of doing nothing is more expensive than the cost of doing something. The longer we wait, the longer we, you know, frankly, mess around without making decisions here, the costs increase exponentially, and the risks increase exponentially. Providers, folks on the street have been saying for decades, that's a James Baldwin quote, anyone who's ever been poor knows how incredibly expensive it is, you know, that poverty is. So we have an obligation here to do the right thing, to do the better thing, and that means, you know, getting people off the street from congregate settings into a better housing situation, and then we can figure out what level of services and support people are going to need once we do the first necessary thing of getting people into a better housing situation.
One question before we let you go, Joe Wilson. San Francisco Unified estimates that as of 2017, 2,100 students were homeless. What is happening with homeless families?
Well, unfortunately, not a whole lot else is happening. There has been some movement, and Supervisor Dean Preston, you know, was the first to move on this with the good folks at Providence to get homeless families into a better living situation. We have a continuing challenge with getting pregnancy regarded as a medical condition, medically vulnerable condition that prioritizes pregnant women. We have a coalition of family shelter providers trying to push the city to get more resources allocated. To date, as I...
Oh, Joe, did we lose you? I think we just lost Joe Wilson. Well, Joe Wilson, thank you so much for joining us. Joe Wilson is executive director and a former client of Hospitality House, and they moved their unhoused clients into a hotel room last week, which was first reported by Joe Eskenazi, a columnist with Mission Local. Joe, before we let you go, I just want to ask you, you know, I was under the impression that San Francisco Mayor London Breed was the first mayor to make a decision about sheltering in place. I watched the press conference and she did say that other Bay Area counties were going to also shelter in place. But you report in your piece that it was actually healthcare workers, health directors that were going to initially make this announcement.
The announcement was decided, crafted, and was to be made by the seven health directors across six counties. Mayor Breed scheduled her press conference first. Other county officials are confused and you know, taken aback by that because they were all told that the doctors were going to announce first. That was the prudent thing to do because, you know, you have the doctors announcing this. You know, the white coats know best, I think, is the phrase that was told to me. And they, you know, this was seen as a deviation from a plan. You know, again, I don't want to stir up the waters too much in a time of crisis, but it was an interesting move to schedule a press conference for one mayor, before all the other mayors and all the other cities and all in these six counties. And as a result, you know, while much good has been done here in San Francisco, this is not a San Francisco centric effort. A great deal of the effort behind this health directive is coming out of Santa Clara County, which was hit harder first. Mm. And so, you know, again, lots of good work has been done here, and I think Bay Area voters, I would hope, are appreciative and sophisticated enough to reward a politician who says, "I listened to my health experts. I enabled their science-directed visions. One doesn't need to hitch the wagon to Hema herself." That would be my hope.
Well, Joe, as always, thanks for your great reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That is Joe Eskenazi, managing editor and columnist at Mission Local, a news outlet covering all aspects of San Francisco. He recently wrote a widely read article called COVID-19, the Atlantic article about San Francisco is a fable. Here's what's really happening. And you can find that piece at yourcallradio.org. Now I would like to welcome Giselle Ruthier to the show. Giselle is policy director at the Coalition for the Homeless in New York City. Hi, Giselle. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, first off, since New York City is unfortunately the epicenter of this outbreak, how are you and your loved ones and community doing?
You know, we're hanging in there. I think, you know, for folks who are homeless, though, in New York City, things are not particularly great. You know, we've got the crisis that is hitting people, vulnerable people, particularly hard, including those who are on the streets and living in congregate shelters. And we're pushing as hard as we can to get safe space for them immediately.
So we just did a segment about what's happening here in San Francisco. I'm sure you heard of the outbreak in one of our largest shelters. Can you give us a sense of what the homeless crisis is like in New York City? You know, how many homeless people are living on the streets? How many shelters do you have?
Yeah, so in New York City, there are about 63,000 people who are homeless and in the shelter system every single night. There are thousands more people that are on the streets, but we don't have a great estimate of what that number looks like. In New York City, the vast majority of people who are homeless are sheltered within the city's shelter system. That's because we have a right to shelter here in New York City. So that's sort of the universe in which we're dealing with right now, and folks who are most at risk right now are folks that are living in the congregate shelter. So there's primarily single adults who are sleeping in dorm-style settings, sharing dining space and common space. And we know now, as of April 12th, that over 420 homeless people have tested positive for COVID. It's across the entire shelter system. And we have 23 people who have died who are homeless. Already. And so we are in the thick of it, and the curve is not flattening for people who are homeless. And we are, despite the fact that we have 63,000 people in shelters, the city has only opened up 700 hotel beds, particularly specifically for homeless people, for self-isolation, which is not nearly enough. And that's the problem that we're dealing with right now.
How many hotel beds, sorry, you cut out?
700.
Wow, 700. So these numbers are really astonishing. 63,000 homeless people living in shelters. As far as you know, 420 tested positive. What is the testing process like in New York City shelters?
Well, that's another big problem, is that the only folks that are actually getting tested are people who are so sick that they need to be going to the hospital or require hospitalization. And so this is in no way indicative of the true scope of what we're seeing. And I think that's true in the homeless population. That's true more broadly. But particularly for people who are homeless and have reduced access to healthcare to begin with, we know for sure that this is an undercount. And this is really people who are more severely ill, who have gotten to the point where they can be tested in a hospital.
Wow, because we do know that so many people who are asymptomatic, you know, have COVID-19. I was just reading this morning about pregnant women who've been tested in New York City, and they are testing positive for coronavirus, and they do not have symptoms.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that we've learned about this virus, but I think overall the takeaway here is that we know that there's community spread in New York. We know that people who are asymptomatic can be spreading the virus. And the best public health guidance that we have is for people to self-isolate at home. And that's not possible to do if you are homeless. And so we have been pushing the city and the state to pay greater attention to people who are homeless and who are in this particular situation in which they actually cannot heed the advice of public health officials because they don't have a house over their head. And so of particular concern are both people on the streets and people who are living in congregate shelters who have very regular contact with many other people. And the city has not taken the risk of spread among folks who are homeless as seriously as it should be.
Mm. Well, and I bring up the pregnant women study just because it shows, let's see, it's Columbia University screened 200 women. 33 patients were positive, 29 had no symptoms. So it's just really important to point that out, that a lot of people could have it and be asymptomatic. And, you know, you just have to wonder how many people in shelters have this with no symptoms. So what is being done in New York City shelters? What are you hearing from clients and from shelter workers about protecting people?
Yeah, right now things are not great. I mean, the city has implemented some bare bones guidance for shelters about how to maximize social distancing within congregate facilities, but it does not actually reduce contact in between people. So those kind of minimal guidelines include, staggering meal times, assembling beds head to toe. That's not going to get the root cause of people being in a congregate living facility and having regular contact with other people 24 hours a day. And so they've started opening up isolation hotel beds and utilizing all of our vacant hotel rooms for private space for people who are homeless, but not at the speed and scale which we need. Right now, they're only prioritizing people who are symptomatic, who have tested positive. But what they need to be doing is de-densifying the shelter system, moving out tens of thousands of people, prioritizing people who are not just positive, those who are in high-risk categories, those who are older, and getting that congregate shelter system to a place where it is safe for people. And if it cannot be made safe for people, everybody needs to be moved to a hotel room.
Right. And Giselle, what has changed in terms of what is available for unhoused people? Because usually people leave the shelter, you know, sometimes very early in the morning, and they go to different places for meals. They go to the library. I know some people who ride public transportation as a safe place to just take a rest. And unfortunately, right now, there aren't many places to take a break. What is here in the Bay Area? Because the libraries are closed, for example. You know, essential, a lot of services have closed other than essential. What is that like in New York City?
Yeah, this has been a big problem for folks who are homeless and on the streets in New York as well. We at the Coalition for the Homeless, actually, we run a mobile soup kitchen where we have vans that go out throughout the city and hand out meals at various stops in Manhattan and the Bronx. And we have so many more people coming to access food from our program than we've had before because so many other places have closed. And not only access to food, but people are coming and saying there's nowhere left to go to the bathroom. There are no restrooms open. There are no showers open. I don't know where to go to wash my hands. And so people can't take basic steps to maintain their own personal hygiene because so many things have shut down. And at the same time, many are afraid to enter the shelter system because the fear of the congregate nature of the shelter system and the fear of the virus spread. So it's really dire for folks. We have the mayor did, added a little bit of access to food for folks who are homeless. We have all of our public schools now giving out 3 meals a day, not just students and families, but to any homeless or any New York adult who needs them as well. So homeless people have been availing themselves of those meals, but we still need, there's still critical access that we really need for bathrooms and showers and hand washing stations for people who are on the streets.
Today we're speaking with Giselle Routhier, Policy Director at the Coalition for the Homeless in New York City. 63,000 unhoused people are living in shelters in New York City. Giselle says so far 420 people have tested positive, but still we just don't have adequate testing in this country. Less than 1% of the country has been tested. Sadly and tragically, 23 unhoused people in New York City have passed away from the virus. I also wanted to ask you, Giselle, about families. According to your organization, families make up more than 2/3 of the unhoused population or the shelter population in New York City. So that's about 15,000 families with just over 22,000 children?
Yep, that's correct.
Wow. And what's their status?
Yeah, so families with children are in very homeless families. With children and homeless families without children are in similar situations in that they are also, again, living without their own home, living without their own personal space. Family shelters in New York City typically are set up such that a family will have their own room and access to a private bathroom. So the setup is a little safer for families, but it's also, poses a risk of families spreading the virus amongst themselves, particularly when they're in usually a very small room, a very small space. So families are getting hit as well and are certainly being exposed as many of homeless folks in New York are as well.
You know, I'm wondering, Giselle, like San Francisco, New York is home to a lot of millionaires and billionaires. I mean, the inequality really does hit you in the face there. This is, a lot of people are saying that this is a time to really call for systemic changes, not Band-Aids anymore, because that's what really got us to this place. So what are you hearing from advocates who work with unhoused people in New York about the changes that you would like to see as a result of this crisis?
Yeah, you're right. We absolutely need systemic change and not Band-Aids in this situation. I think what this crisis has really highlighted is that housing is healthcare. When you have public health officials and doctors telling you as part of your healthcare plan to go home, to stay home, you cannot do that if you don't have a home. And so we absolutely have to be focused at the city, state, and federal levels on providing permanent housing assistance to people to get through this crisis and beyond this crisis so that we're not faced with ongoing mass homelessness throughout the country moving forward, because it's not only a trauma for people who are homeless, it's a health crisis for them as well. And we need to be focusing at every level of making sure that housing is available for people.
And we both live in places where there's a lot of luxury housing. I mean, some of it is on pause now because of this virus, but that's what we are seeing. So what are some of the tangible changes that you would like to see?
Yeah, I mean, but now is really the time to think big and to be pushing the federal government to reinvest in housing in the way that they have not done so in many, many decades. You know, we need long-term rent assistance from the federal government. You know, many people who are low income and can't afford their housing don't have access to a housing voucher to help maintain their rent because there aren't enough of them. We need to make sure we have rent assistance as an entitlement. You know, we need to be focusing on progressive tax structures so that we're actually taxing those that can afford it, that can afford those wealthy homes, and providing that extra assistance for people who can't. And we're living in when folks are living in cities where, you know, there's so much luxury housing being built and not enough housing for folks who are earning very low incomes. So we need to be focusing on those big picture items. Some of them can be done at the city and state level, but we really also need that investment at the federal level.
And is that getting much attention in the media in New York? The New York Times headline yesterday, it's a time bomb. 23 die as virus hits packed homeless shelters. Are these systemic changes being covered in the media now, or do you think that, you know, that might come in a couple of weeks?
I think people have started to think about how this crisis is impacting people who don't have a safe space to go. Right. And I think people are starting to think about now the implications of homelessness overall, and what that means for us, for people who are homeless, and for us as a society. So we need to keep the drumbeat going. It's on advocates, on people with lived experience, on elected officials to make sure that we are continuing to talk about this and we are continuing to push for those solutions that we need.
And final thoughts, Giselle, is there anything else you'd like to mention about what's going on across the country? I mean, there are just so many headlines here. Pop-up homeless virus treatment center opening in Las Vegas. Coronavirus gives LA first homeless tent city in 40 years. A lot of people were reading in late March about what was happening in Nevada, where they were actually putting bodies on the street with tape around the body to try to ensure a 6-foot distance. And there was outrage by homeless advocates there in Nevada. Anything really strike you about what you're seeing across the country?
I mean, take it from folks who are here in New York and we're experiencing, really, really intense crisis right now. Get people into housing, get people into safe spaces, get people into hotels. Take this very seriously and implement solutions that are going to keep people safe as quickly as possible. And we cannot ignore the need for permanent affordable housing moving forward for everybody who is currently homeless and everybody who will become homeless as a result of this. We need to be heavily investing in both immediate emergency solutions and safe spaces and long-term access to housing.
Well, Giselle, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us. We'd love to have you back in the near future.
Thank you for having me.
Giselle Ruffier is policy director at the Coalition for the Homeless in New York City. Giselle told us that 63,000 homeless people live in shelters in New York City. So far, 420 people have tested positive and 23 have tragically died. You can find more information about today's show at yourcallradio.org. You can also find all of our past shows there. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about farm workers and meat processing plant workers on the front lines of the COVID-19 crisis. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for line producing and answering the phones. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.